Hello, it's another episode of Today in Africa Yesterday. I am Femi.
And I am Lola.
Welcome to another episode. For the next minutes, we'll talk about the West African society before colonization, the kingdoms that existed during this period, the infiltration of European countries in West Africa and the resulting conflicts, and finally, the concept of colonization in British and French colonies of Western Africa.
The West Africa, or let's say Western Africa, is the westernmost region of Africa. The countries of Western Africa were defined by the United Nations and they made up to 16 countries. They include the Benin, Burkina Faso, Cape Verde, the Gambia, Ghana, Guinea-Bissau, Ivory Coast, Liberia, Mali, Mauritania, Niger, Nigeria, Senegal, Sierra Leone, and Togo. The population of the Western Africa is estimated to about 381 million people, and that's as of 2018. Generally, the history of Africa can be divided into five major parts, where we have the prehistory, that was where the first human settlers arrived, developed agriculture, and made contact with the people to the north. The second is the Iron Age empires that consolidated the intra-Africa and extra-Africa trade and developed centralized states. The third is the major polities flourished, which would undergo the extensive history of contact with non-Africans. The fourth is the colonial period, where the Great Britain and France controlled nearly the entire region. And the fifth is the post-independence era, where current nations were formed. In the south of Sudan, strong city-states arose in Igboland, such as the 10th century kingdom of Unri.
Okay, so Unri was the first kingdom to arise in Igboland.
Yes, it was actually.
It was very early, I mean the 10th century.
And it also gave birth to it gave birth to art and custom of the Igbo people. While Bono in the 12th century, which eventually culminated in the formation of all-powerful Akan Empire of Ashanti. Ife rose to prominence around this century, and in the east, Oyo arose as a dominant Yoruba state and the Aro Confederacy.
Oyo is still like the largest city in Africa today.
Yeah, Oyo is actually like the largest Yoruba, the city where Yoruba people
are most dominated. And
yes,
even the kingdom of Oyo before colonization and before even splitting Oyo into two as Oyo and Osun, it was the largest country, it was the largest state and as well the largest kingdom in West Africa as at then.
The development of the region's economy allowed more centralized states and civilization to form. The Kingdom of Unri was a Western African medieval state in present-day southeastern Nigeria, while the Oyo Empire was a Yoruba empire of what is today western and northern central Nigeria. It was established in the 15th century, and the Oyo Empire grew to become one of the largest West African states.
The Oyo Empire actually gave birth to modern states that we now know as Lagos, Osun. They're most dominated by the Yoruba people.
Yeah, Yoruba
Lagos,
people from Oyo.
State, exactly. Osun.
And we more like speak one Yoruba language.
Exactly, yeah, but they are kind of like more different.
There's a little difference
while
in
some
each of the languages.
Go, you know, the differences in Yoruba language can vary from a little bit of difference from
tonation,
the main Yoruba, and
yeah,
it can go to a language you even assume it's Igbo.
Yes, exactly. The Benin Empire was a pre-colonial empire located in what is now the southern Nigeria, and its capital was formerly Edo, but now it's Benin City in Edo. The Benin craft was most adored and treasured bronze casting in the history of Africa. It was annexed by the British Empire in 1897 during the invasion and scramble of Africa. So this is like a prehistory of what of what the Western African was before colonization, how beautiful it was, like just the arts,
different empires,
the culture, different empires coming together, exactly, civilization and all of that coming together. They were actually living fine.
It was very cultural.
Yeah, it's definitely going to be very beautiful because each culture with their own likes, do's and don'ts, and
exactly,
and mixing with other cultures, mm-hmm, you know, trying to connect to them, create a contact with them, and
each kingdoms where it's in its entirety different from others, and we even saw like subduing of kingdoms, like kingdoms were fighting with each other if they have clashes, and some were conquering others, taking their land space. It was just like normal human interaction.
Yeah, it was exactly, and also it's the art, the culture, the beauty of all of that. Is Africa is known as a very cultural continent. Yeah, so the art and everything coming together, creating this beautiful feeling of nature, you know, all of that.
Exactly.
So the prehistory of the Africans, where the West African countries was a great one. Yeah, it was really beautiful.
But it was called, between the late 1800s and middle 1900s, West Africa, like most other regions in Africa, faced European and American military invasion, colonization, and diplomatic pressures. The scramble for African mission was motivated by the search for profitable raw materials that exist in Africa, hence the partition and eventual colonization of Africa. For most part of the season, we have been referring to the Berlin Conference aired in 1884 through to 1885 as a reference to the beginning of the scramble for Africa and colonization of most regions in Africa. But what exactly led to this conference is that the uncontrolled attempts of European countries like Britain, France, Germany, Portugal, Belgium, Italy, and Spain to own a stake in different parts of Africa and domination of these African kingdoms so much that it was like an extension of their own country was so intense that they were feared it would lead to an inter-imperialist conflict and eventually war. Therefore, to prevent this prophesied intercontinental war, German Chancellor Otto von Bismarck convened a diplomatic summit of European powers in order to guide the conduct of European inter-imperialist competition in Africa. The treaty drawn up during this conference provided the basis for the partition, invasion, and colonization of Africa by various European powers. So at this point, European countries are decided and split up Africa between themselves. So European countries, individual European countries like the Belgium, the Spain, the Portugal, and so on. At that point, the treaty that were to be signed by the Africans to the Europeans, it meant that they are signing off the authority of their land to their colonial masters. But to the Africans, they thought it was just another, you know, way to make bond, relationship,
make friends,
exactly, yeah, to improve together, their friendship and
exactly,
improve their relationship. So it was like a scam to the Africans.
Because the Africans did not have that knowledge.
Exactly, they
didn't know it was colonization. They thought it was a friendship treaty kind of thing.
And at that point, Africans were trading with Europeans, so they were more like to improve trading and build relationship between the two continents. But when African leaders figured out that they were being sold to Europeans, they resisted the power of the Europeans, which led to war in most cases. One of the wars that was caused by signing treaty was organized by Samori Toure of the Mandinka Empire in West Africa, which at the time involved the use of arms and quick-firing rifles he acquired from European traders in Sierra Leone. So this is sent out agents to sign the so-called treaties of protection with the leaders of African societies. For Europeans, this meant these African kingdoms had signed off their sovereignty to European powers. That means evidence that most African countries had a very strong economical relationship with European countries, and some European citizens have actually established themselves and their business in African countries. So it got these quick firing rifles and arms from European traders in Sierra Leone and Senegal, which were neighboring countries to Mandinka Empire at that time. So with these arms, it was able to resist the European powers for 16 years. That was from 1882 to 1898. But eventually, it was captured and exiled to Gabon, where he died in 1900. That was 2 years after he could not resist the power of the European army anymore. Obviously, most African societies fought bravely to retain control over the kingdoms, but most of them lost because of lack of political and technological advancements. Part of the blame for the defeat can also be attributed to political disorganization and instability. We can also see that in African countries at this point, there were no exact organization of political structures. So let's talk about the colonial rule in West Africa, and we're going to be talking about the British and the French colonial rule and their individual system that they brought to control West Africa.
Majorly, it was the British and French that colonized most Western African countries.
Yes, the British and French colonized most of Western Africa. The Portuguese also colonized some parts of Western Africa and some other European countries, although it was mostly the British and French. The British colonial rule was basically an indirect system of governance where they established their laws with the help of existing local rulers. So this indirect rule means there was going to be a head of state as one. But they figured out that these Western countries actually have existing leaders, which they called Oba in some parts of Nigeria, and they were the kings of kingdoms and also the leaders of some very minute cities in West Africa. So when Lord Lugard actually saw that this was trending in Africa and they already had an established centralized system of government, what it just brought, especially in the Hausa Fulani Emirate of Northern Nigeria. So what the governor general at the point, and he was to rule the colonial states. So what he did was that he allowed those leaders to keep on leading, but they now served him instead of being independent. So they now served him, and what happened was he received orders from the colonial secretary in London and made sure it was implemented even to the grassroots societies in Nigeria. So that's how many other countries that Britain colonized in West Africa were governed by the Governor General, which was at the top of the food chain. Then we had provincial commissioners, which were in some cases local rulers. And then we had the indirect rule system where local rulers and kings were more closer to the grassroots society. So the indirect rule worked well in areas that had already established centralized system, such as the empire and kingdoms, where the kings were already had a say in what happened to individual lives of the society. So comparing the British colonial system of governance, which was indirect rule and involving leaders of the grassroots, and the French colonial concept of assimilation, we can see that the French concept was more centralized than the British. The British was a very decentralized system of governance.
Where they decided to use the
already existing leaders in the societies. Exactly.
So they don't change everything completely.
Yes. So contrary to what the British did, the French established a more centralized administrative system. To achieve this, the French adopted a colonial concept of assimilation, which was based on the idea that citizens of French colonies could actually become French by adopting their language and culture. So looking at this, the French actually actually gave the option that citizens of their colonies could actually become French, and them becoming French gave them the full right of becoming an actual French citizen, which gave them rights to hearing in the law court and have some degree of human rights allocated to them. Let's look at an example of the French policy of assimilation, which was in Senegal four communes, which were Gore, Dakar, Rufisik and Saint Louis. So the residents of these communes have been exposed to assimilation for a long period of time. That is, they have been encouraged that if they could, you know, attain some heights in both being intelligent about French and their language, and also have worked for the French very productively and have medal in some place or the other in in the French community, they could actually become French and have all the rights that a French man actually does have. But apart from being centralized, the French also were in some parts of the countries of their colonies, they were decentralized in the sense that
they tried to adopt centralization. So some parts adopted centralization and some parts where they colonized they adopted decentralization.
But the thing is, they were not willing to actually adopt decentralization. For some parts of where they colonized, where the kingdoms were already very much established and they were not just able to pull off the leadership position of the kings in that areas, they had to leave them and establish a decentralized system of governance. Those who became French at the end of the day were elite, so they had the opportunity to learn, they had the opportunity to serve for the French more than those who were kind of like grassroots peasants, farmers that didn't have a seat at the table. One of those who became a Frenchman was Blaise Diagne, who was the first black deputy in the French Assembly. So let me also mention that these people of the four communes were also given the opportunity to elect a deputy in the French Assembly, so someone who represented them in the French Assembly and saw to their betterment and made sure that the French actually recognized them in his decision. So one of that person was Blaise Diagne, who fought for extending all rights of a French citizen to all residents of the four communes. So I just want to establish the fact that Blaise Diagne actually did a very good work in making sure every citizen of the four communes were actually given the rights of a Frenchman without fulfilling stringent conditions laid by the French. So it was a good job well done by Blaise Diagne. Basically, they were treated as a French citizen. The only difference was that they were black and the French was actually white. But there were stringent conditions put in place by the French to ensure, you know, very intense scrutiny before you can become a French, which was quite restrictive for the people of French colonies. One, they had to have given a medal, they have to have worked very productively for the French, they've had to be able to speak their language properly, and, you know, educative system in order to teach these people how to speak French was not all that put in place, you know, to encourage them to becoming a French citizen. But most people that actually became French citizen through this method were elite. So that's it for the colonization of West Africa and the pre-colonization era of West Africa. We saw how they were peasants, farmers, and traded with the Northern Africans. We also saw how they developed and traded with the Europeans.
How they worked towards civilization, and also we saw how much their art and crafts valued them.
We also saw some kingdoms like the Oyo, the Inri, the Igbo land. We also saw some wars that took place when the Europeans were trying to infiltrate the region of the West Africans.
Hey guys, thank you for listening to another episode on Africa Yesterday. Please subscribe to us everywhere you listen to podcasts. If you're listening to us on Apple Podcasts, do well to give us a 5-star review. And also don't forget to recommend us to your friends. Well, that's the only way you can keep us talking. Goodbye.
We say a very big thank you to our crew, Rachel Ononre and Femi Fadamusi. They have been of great resource to this team, ensuring we deliver quality to you guys.